So hello there and welcome back to another Elastico podcast with me, Christopher Atkins. And this week we're going to be discussing La Liga ahead of the new season starting next week. We have Edu from La Lambreta podcast. We also have Ravi from Forza Football and Joseph Sexton, a freelance writer on La Liga, all here for you today. So it should be a great show ahead. So first of all, I'll just run through, as always, some of the scores from around Europe. In Germany this weekend, we've had some interesting scores. Leverkusen beat Werder Bremen today. Schalke put 5 past Cologne yesterday with a Huntelaar hat-trick. Hoffenheim beat Dortmund in a big shock there with a Salihovic free kick. And also Bayern won their second game with a away win at Wolfsburg with a Luis Gustavo goal late on. In France, PSG once again failed to win. They lost their opening game, and now we have a draw away at Rennes. Lyon with a draw at home to Ajaccio. That's a bit of a shock, with Lisandro scoring late just to rescue a point. But then over in England, Manchester United winning late on with an Ashley Young deflected effort. Bolton put 4 past QPR on their Premiership debut. The Loftus Road club have got a lot to think about there, whereas Chelsea, Arsenal and Liverpool could only manage draws. In Brazil last night, Cruzeiro put 5 past Havaí. Santos once again lost 2-0 with Neymar and Ganso helpless. And Sao Paulo missed the opportunity to go top, drawing with Atlético Paranaense in the Campeonato Brasileiro. That's the scores on the doors. Let's get on to the main topic, wasting no time. La Liga starts next week, and we have our panel here. Let's start with Edu. Providing it starts next week, what are you looking forward to about this season?
Well, hello, Chris, and thank you for having me on your podcast. I think this is my first invite, and I trust that it won't be the last. But we're looking forward to La Liga. I think there have been some changes in the power structure in La Liga that may result in some interesting results. Of course, Malaga has really strengthened its squad, so that might change the dynamic of La Liga, another team that could compete for UEFA position. So, I'm looking forward to it. Although, of course, as you know, it is still up in the air whether the La Liga is going to begin at his scheduled time, if there is such a thing as scheduled time in La Liga in Spain, right?
That's very true. Ravi, is there anything in particular you're looking for, bar maybe the Malaga challenge? Do you think there's anyone else who could compete up at the top?
First of all, thanks for having me on, Chris. Great to be here. As far as on the top, I think it would still be between Madrid and Barcelona for the title. Whatever changes that might happen in the power structure or the line out there or the way teams will end up at the end of the season will be between 3, 4, 5, 6 with Project Malaga, which is one of the biggest teams of off-season. They have really strengthened well, and they're going to be a force to reckon with as long as they can gel quickly, because it's a lot of new players in a team. But the other thing I'm looking forward to is also how the financial trouble at the majority of the clubs is going to play out. A lot of clubs are in deep trouble. They haven't paid, or they're behind the payments to the players, which is why the players are striking. There are about 200 players that haven't been paid in the past year or past 2 years. So that's another big thing that I'm looking for, how that will play out. And if La Liga will really become strict and penalize these teams, or we will go in this route of everyone owing money to everyone else to nowhere.
But that's a big thing with La Liga. Obviously, with the strange TV rights setup they've got there, with Barcelona and Real Madrid getting far more money than everyone else, it leads to a lot of financial difficulties for most of the clubs. So I'll bring in Joseph at this point. You write a lot on La Liga extensively throughout the year. What difficulties, and how do you think they could improve the whole league setup as a whole to improve the finances of these teams?
Well, I think it's simply stating the obvious, Chris, that the current TV deal setup is it's a serious problem for La Liga. If you look at the combined income from television rights, when you compare it, well, obviously it compares very unfavorably to the Premier League with the combination of domestic and overseas rights. But also, if you look at what's happened in Italy, where they're slowly moving towards something more akin to the Premier League model, where you have collective bargaining again, you can see that actually the income in that league, the aggregate income is after rising. And that's one of the problems in Spain. I mean, it's a huge problem that Barcelona and Real get such a multiple of what the other clubs are receiving. But when you sell off those rights individually, of course, it's going to be more attractive to buy those of the big two clubs. And then you look at teams down the bottom and they're really getting by on nothing. And this all ties in with everything we're talking about, to do with the potential strike, to do with the dire state of clubs' finances. And it's obviously a massive issue that's affecting the league.
Yeah, I think it's clear for all to see that the finances of the little clubs aren't going to get any better until the TV rights deal is rearranged. I think you've hit it straight on the head there, Joseph. Edu, do you see any of the little clubs being able to push into the top half at all, or is it just too much to ask with the current financial situation?
Well, as you know, Chris, in the 1980s, for example, I think you have to go all the way back to that era. It was fairly common in La Liga to have teams, different teams, but on and off, sneak into the top spots, whether Sporting Gijón in 1982, Real Sociedad could compete and win titles, Atlético Bilbao as well. You know, we had that tradition. It has become increasingly more difficult, and I think it is nearly impossible today for a team to compete at that level. And when it happens, I think the bottom falls off in the following season because there's not enough revenue, additional revenue that they make in order to be able to compete in two different competitions. So I would say it is very, very unlikely that we can see one of the modest teams compete with the top, teams for a prolonged period of time. Very difficult.
Rafi, of course, your team, Villarreal, managed it a few years ago, came from seemingly nowhere, and they've managed to stick it out. How do they manage to consistently stay in the top five or six places over the last few years?
I think Villarreal is one example of good management and using the money that they have, the limited amount, in the right place. So one thing Villarreal does is they don't buy expensive players or players with high salaries. What they tend to do is they buy players young and play them in the system, youth system. We have a good youth system. Villarreal B is the only team other than Barcelona that has a B team in the Segunda. That's the highest they can play at. So they tend to use that as a springboard to fill the squad with these players and, end up buying a couple of star players. So a team like Villarreal or Valencia can afford to pay a couple of guys a very high salary comparable to what the big teams like Madrid or Barcelona pay to the mid-level players. But they can't pay a squad like 4 or 5 million a year for an entire squad. So I think that's the key. So you need to be careful, plan a lot for over a few years to just get the right set of players into the team.
Joseph, at the moment we're seeing a phenomenon of Barcelona and Real Madrid in particular loaning out their younger players who aren't getting any game time to the likes of Valencia, even Chelsea this last week. What do you see? Do you see any benefit in this system?
If you look at it in abstract terms, it's not something that's particularly unusual. The manner in which they loan players out, the buyback clause seems to be a peculiarly Spanish institution, and we can see reasons why. We can see that Real have let players go and had to buy them back years later, and it's just become a standard clause. And you look at the complicated deal with Bojan going to Roma. I mean, it makes the head spin when you look at the various terms and conditions. And I think the best definition I've seen of that move is that it's essentially a loan in terms of money to Barcelona in the short term to finance their purchases. But what I think is particularly problematic in the context of La Liga is the size of Real and Barca squads. And, of course, when they loan out players, they put stipulations in the contracts that they can't play against their parent club. But it goes beyond that in Spain as well. I was reading a couple of weeks ago Sid Lowe's piece in Sports Illustrated, And he cited the examples of Negredo, of José Callejón and Rubén de la Red when he was at Getafe. Now, those were players who were actually sold, not loaned out, sold with buyback clauses, and yet they weren't allowed to play against Real Madrid. And I think this is a really, these kind of stipulations are, it's really, really bad for the competition. And I'm surprised that it's permitted by the league.
Yeah, I agree. And in terms of the Bowden and the Oriol deal to Chelsea, Rafi, what benefit do you think it gives to Roma and Chelsea other than a player for a year, maybe two? Is it, are they literally just seeing it as a loan deal with the view to giving the player back?
Well, I think these two are very different cases. Let's look at the Bojan deal, for example. I think the deal is like Roma is supposed to pay Barcelona $12 million, and if Barcelona buys back after 2 years, it will cost them $13 million. And if Roma wants to keep him after 2 years, it will cost them, I think, $28 million to buy him outright. So this is, as Joseph pointed out, this seems to be a short-term thing where Barcelona still has a lot of interest in the player, and they want to see if he can pan out at another club where he gets more minutes and take him back if he's good after 2 years. I highly doubt that Roma would pay $28 million to buy him 2 years from now. So I see him back in Barcelona in 2 years. As far as Oriol Romeu is concerned, that seems more like a move where the player has been playing in the B team, and Barcelona are not totally sold on him, and they see that he's unlikely to get a place even a couple of years from now because of the depth they have in that position, like the defensive midfielders. And I think they don't see him as a long-term successor to Busquets. Well, 2 years from now, Busquets will be 23 or 22, so it's not like he's getting old either. So that's the case where they don't probably expect him to come back in 2 years. And they and that is why Chelsea is interested there, because Chelsea is not a short-term club. So Chelsea probably have seen that, and they think that if he pans out in 2 years, Barcelona would let him or sell him outright to them.
I just wanted to say with the Bojan deal, I think it could be something that could be very good for Barcelona, because clearly his development has stalled. And, okay, he's not lived up to the great hype there was surrounding him before Euro 2008. But I still think there's a good player in there. And going to a club where he can play at a high level and get first-team football, it could see him realise some of that potential. And as Ravi says, the deal is very complicated. I mean, you can't see Barcelona spending that huge sum of money to buy him back after 2 years. You can't see Roma spending it. They'll come to an agreement at the end of the 2 years. And it's going to be down to whether at that stage Barca see him as a viable first-team player for the future. And I think the eventual sum, wherever he ends up, is going to be a lot smaller than anything that's stipulated in the contract at the moment.
Edu, do you see these developments further causing a two-tier league within the Spanish system? At the moment, with the TV rights deal, you've very much got the top few clubs and then the rest. Do you think this is just going to add to that with Barcelona, Real Madrid and the likes being able to keep hold of players in case they get good?
Yeah, it's hard to see a change, a dramatic change in La Liga. I think probably the English league, the German league, the Italian league maybe are more mobile in that sense than the Spanish league. I think it would be difficult. And I think we have more than a two-tier Liga. We have, a three-tier Liga. I think Real Madrid and Barcelona are sort of in the out of this league category. And then there is five or six teams that are fairly solid. If not financially, at least institutionally, they have a large enough following where the social pressure will be sufficient to maintain them at a top level. You know, what happens, ends up happening is that the local political establishment will have to, you know, prop them up because of the pressure from the base. And then there's the rest of the teams. I see a very, very, bleak sort of future for La Liga in that sense. I don't see any people in Spain right now that have the foresight to really restructure not only, you know, this sort of financial crisis that we have, but in terms of marketing, you know, we are really, Spain is really, really behind American teams, or I think even the English team. Now they have to really look at the way they market teams. I think Robbie has really dabbled in this a lot, and he can probably, you know, sort of point to areas where La Liga can improve the marketing, and that could also generate revenues. Robbie, do you want to maybe jump on this?
Yeah, I was going to bring this up. So basically, people always keep talking about the TV deal as the bad thing that is the problem that created all the mess right now. But if you look at how La Liga is marketed as Madrid and Barcelona, and that's where it's losing the plot compared to other leagues. If you look at how Premier League is marketed, they market the 20 teams together. And there are a lot of things in the deals or in the marketing that they would get a pie of the overall money. So they would pull all the money together and then divide it. It's the same in like American sports, like Major League Baseball or NFL, where the marketing is done together, and then they will split it across all the teams. And what this does is it will give money even to the smaller teams and also give exposure. And the other area where La Liga marketing is pretty bad is if you try to buy a La Liga jersey other than Madrid or Barcelona, say in USA, forget about it. It's really hard. You don't get an official jersey, the new one, until very late. And usually you get it from secondhand sellers or third-party sellers on Amazon Marketplace, or something not the official channels. And if you talk about Premier League jerseys, they're available. Even Stoke City, you could get a Stoke City jersey anywhere. Not to say Stoke City is a bad team. So I think there are other places where they can make this better. The TV deal, I think, is not well structured, which everyone knows. But that battle shouldn't move people away from thinking about other ways where La Liga can improve. There are a lot of other ways where La Liga is way behind other leagues. There's another point is also the kickoff time.
Mm-hmm.
La Liga doesn't publish kickoff times until like 10 days before the game.
Yeah, this is pathetic. Yeah, this is ridiculous.
I mean, for any TV, if you know even a little bit about TV or radio, for them, knowing things in advance when the program is there is the most important thing. And for someone like in US where people are so programmed in their lives that they record these things and they want to see what, you know, they want to plan everything ahead, like two weeks in advance, 1 week in advance. For them, this is a nightmare because if you look at ESPN3 scheduling, they say a La Liga game, but they don't say which one because they have no clue. And I think that's another part of the problem, where to get more people hooked on to this league where they have a great product, but they just are not marketing it the right way.
That's also very it's very harsh on supporters. I mean, I've been caught out myself actually traveling to Spain to see a game and suddenly find out it's been moved today, and suddenly you're flying back home without seeing the game. Now, but that also impacts domestic supporters. It's one of the reasons that contributes to the lack of an away culture and an away following culture in Spain, something which you really don't see across the other major European leagues. And beyond that, with the kickoff times, and I don't really see how you can fix this easily, because Spain's kickoff times are the slots they generally use are institutionalized, but it's very unfriendly towards the Asia market, where the Premier League derives so much of its income from. I mean, you know, you have if you're in Southeast Asia, you can watch Premier League football at great slots like midnight and at 9 p.m. and again even earlier for the lunchtime kickoff. But when you've got a 10 p.m. kickoff in Spain, I mean, that's when the bigger games generally take place. That's in the middle of the night there, and you're not going to get a lot of viewers consequentially.
Yeah, I can vouch for that personally. I lived in Shanghai for 6 months, and the 10 p.m. game is at 4 a.m. in Shanghai. It's just ridiculous. I think they're addressing that to a little extent with a 12 p.m. kickoff. However, they're saying Madrid and Barca won't play home games during that time. It would be interesting to see whether they will play any away games at that time. And they also have a new kickoff time, I think, at 4 p.m. Saturday, Sunday. Mm-hmm. So that also could be a good, decent kickoff time for Asia. But it remains to be seen if they will move the big games into those slots.
Rafi, as you know, I lived in China too for a year. And La Liga is seriously behind the Premier League. But not only that, seriously behind the Serie A in terms of following that. You see Premier League jerseys frequently, but you see a lot of Milan jerseys, a lot of Juve jerseys, but you rarely see the Spanish clubs bar, say, Barcelona on
the
pitch.
One of the things that is a fair point is that many of the local teams, the sort of second B and third division teams, tend to play at 11 and a.m. and midday, noon, and they claim that they would be affected terribly by the first division teams playing at those times. So, you know, there always are arguments to not to move the games till noon. Although years ago, and this is probably going back to the 70s, there were games in the middle of the afternoon, right? So at 3 and 4 p.m., which is generally the, you know, lunchtime, right, in Spain. But I think that's not a bad compromise to have the games around that time. And Real Madrid and Barcelona could easily play at those times and sort of be able to watch in the Asian markets, but some of the other teams could also be showcased as well.
Yeah, I think the that's a great point. But to get people to watch La Liga at that time, you have to at least entice them with the big games first, so that, you know, people get into that mode of there is a kickoff at this time from La Liga. Usually we have a good game there, so that they can watch other teams. If you're going to showcase Mallorca-Getafe in the first week or first few weeks, you're going to showcase the smaller teams.
Yeah.
I doubt the usefulness of the move.
That's an excellent point. And also you can see with if you look at the resistance to change, if you look at what's happened with the Monday night evening slot, the games they put in there, it's, you know, you'll never see Barca or Real play on a Monday night, with the exception of that Clásico, and there were very specific reasons for that with the local elections in Catalonia last November. But, you know, what's the point in having a Monday slot if you're just going to show games that basically the, you know, the general public outside of those two teams have little interest in seeing? And I think you're going to see the same resistance to these earlier slots at the weekend as well, which is a shame because, as you say, it's a prime slot for the Asia market, and it's really something that the league should be looking at.
We had the same problem here with the late kickoffs and the Monday night kickoffs in the UK for a long time. They were normally given to a couple of relegation battling teams, but they've kind of worked against that now in terms of selling the TV deals. You see a lot of teams like Manchester City and Liverpool playing a lot of Monday night games, which gives the people in other markets, maybe in the States, a team that they can recognize and can draw them into the league, which is good to see. But let's move on to the football then. Edu, down at the bottom of the table, who do you fear for this year?
Well, I think we spoke earlier that there's likely to be 10 teams that are going to potentially be in trouble. And I think that it's not a surprise that there'll be so many teams. The situation is, again, critical. And if you have teams like Rayo, who before they begin the season, there are people jumping off the ship and abandoning it, like the trainer or the coach and four players, well, I think they're a prime candidate. But sometimes, this financial crises don't translate into on-field crisis. Rayo itself was able to be not relegated, to come up to first division. So, but I expect the same teams that were there last year to be there, and the three teams that came up, I think, can potentially be in trouble as well. So, if you want to go through them, Osasuna, I think, will be a team that that can potentially be in trouble. Racing de Santander, I thought was a team last year saved by Giovanni Dos Santos. And again, that their forward started putting the ball in the back of the net. I thought that Giovanni, speaking of somebody like Bojan, right, has finally been able to play outside of that big Barcelona structure, and now he's starting to show his color. So Racing, Sporting, Getafe is a team that's really not made to suffer, so they have a lot of trouble. So again, it could be, half a dozen teams, it could be 10 teams that could be in trouble. And I don't really know at this point, which ones are going to be sure things. It's very, very difficult to say, to point out teams at this stage of the season.
In the promoted teams, of course, we have Granada, who have a very interesting connection with Udinese in Italy in terms of players being loaned the same ownership. Ravi, how do you think they're going to get along? Because they have a very small squad, which was supplemented by loan players last season. Do you think they have much chance of survival this year?
Well, I think Granada is an interesting case, as you pointed out. I see them as a team that will do what is more comfortable for the ownership group. Because if Udinese's owner feels that it is better that the team stay in the Primera versus the Segunda, then I think he would, at least in January time frame, he would send, loan some players from Udinese and try to prop it up. But if they think it's better for them that the team stay in Segunda, I think they will just let it play out and see what happens. So I'm very suspicious about this whole Kike Pina, who is the person who is working for the Udinese owner Pozzo in Spain. He is running Granada. He's also taking care of Cadiz, which is in Segunda B, and Tenerife. He has some say in the board of Tenerife, which is just got descended to Segunda B.
And also, Robbie, he represents players, right? It's a very interesting dynamic, right?
Yeah, it's a very interesting dynamic. Just to segue on this, I know some people have picked it up. Zaragoza just signed Roberto, the goalkeeper from Benfica, for $8.5 million. But the actual reality is they just paid, I think, $80,000 and the player's salary. So what's happening here is that very powerful agents like Jorge Mendes and Peter Kenyon, they have formed this player fund. And they are owning the players as a group. And they are shopping these players to clubs who want players, but they can't pay. And these guys own the rights of the players. And if the player value increases, they will sell him. I think this is another kind of a bubble scheme that could shock football in a few years if it is not stopped right away. This has always happened in South America. Like if you look at Carlos Tevez and Mascherano was brought in from Corinthians to first to West Ham and then to Liverpool and Manchester City. But it was in the continental Europe, it is still fairly being the players were owned by the clubs. But with the financial crisis, we are seeing this new phenomenon come in, and I don't see anything good coming out of this.
No, of course. Third-party ownership was banned in England post the Carlos Tevez scenario, which caused a whole load of legal battles and all the controversy with that. And then QPR last year almost lost out on promotion due to the same thing. And as you say, it's been a big thing in South America for a long, long time now. And it's getting even worse with nearly every player in at least the Brazilian league owned by the club and another party. So you had Danilo and Alexandro going to Porto recently for fees of around 10 million euros each. And the club actually received around 4 million in total for the two deals, which is fairly pathetic considering the time they put into developing the players. But let's move on from Granada then. Is there any of the smaller teams whose transfer activity over the summer has made you think, I really want to watch this team come the first round of matches next week, Joseph?
Can we still call Malaga a small team? I don't think we can at this stage, to be honest.
Not really, I guess.
I think they've caught everyone's eye in this transfer window, and rightly so. I mean, you look how depressed the market has been in Spain overall, and the amount of players they're bringing in and the figures they're spending. And if you think, okay, it kind of ties into Edu's point about how tight it can be at the bottom. If you look where they were at the end of March, they look doomed last season, and then they finished a fairly respectable 11th when they finally got their act together when Baptista started scoring. And, you know, they had actually, with everybody fit, they already had the makings of a good squad, a squad that was more than capable of finishing in the top half of the season, top half of the league this season coming. But now you look at the players they're bringing in, and you can see, like, quality players, quality first-team players like Jeremy Toulalon. And, you know, you think they already have Rondon and Baptista up front, and now they've got Van Nistelrooy in there as well. They bought Santi Cazorla for a fee in excess, I think, of €20 million, which is, you know, that's big, big money for any team outside of Barca and Real to be spending on a player. And, you know, with guys like Joaquin coming in and younger players like Isco as well, and Buonanotte coming back from River Plate, I mean, you see that's, it's not just a good team, it's a good squad. And, okay, their first game is against Barcelona, I think, but you really think for that kind of outlay, they have to be aiming for Europa League minimum. And I think it's going to be interesting as well. We have to see if Mata leaves Valencia or not, and we have to see how Villarreal fare this season. But I wouldn't completely write off their chances if either of those two teams slip to any extent of cracking the top four. But, you know, it's a lot of players to bring in, and, okay, Pellegrini's a great manager, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they gel and if they can hit the ground running. And I think... one other signing, well, not so much a new signing, but if you look at Felipe Caicedo moving to Levante on a permanent deal, that's a fantastic piece of business. It was part of the initial loan contract, and he had a fantastic season last year. I think it was 11 goals he scored in 17 appearances, if I'm not mistaken. And they've also brought in Asier Delorno from Valencia. He's maybe not the player he once was, but that's a very... very good signing for a club at Levante's level.
Just to a quick correction, Caicedo has been sold to Lokomotiv Moscow.
Oh, well, yes,
so,
indeed.
Yeah, basically they did great business there, that they bought the rights for $1 million, I think, from Manchester City,
yeah.
And they sold him for $7.5 million. So that's a neat business for them. But yeah, he's gone. But so Levante has a couple of interesting loans from. They got a couple of good players, and but the biggest thing for them is they've lost their coach, Luis Garcia, who has been their coach who promoted them from Segunda to Primera a couple of years ago and kept them in Primera for the last 2 years. So he's gone to Getafe, and that's a small team that has done some really interesting yet sometimes strange signings. They got at the lower end of the market. There is a Dubai group propping them up. And also they got Pablo Sarabia from Real Madrid Castilla, who is a very good prospect for Spain on a loan deal. And they might even get Pedro Leon before the end of the transfer market. So that team, to me, seems like fits a small team last year and still haven't really spent as much, nowhere near as Malaga, but have signed a bunch of players at the lower end of the market.
There is also a team that it is not a small team, obviously, the team with great tradition in La Liga, but I am very anxious to see, which is the new version of Atletico Bilbao. And that is a team that I want to see what they can do with those young players under Bielsa.
I think that might be one of the most interesting stories in this Liga this coming year. I think Bielsa, you know, brings a lot of excitement to the table and can, you know, create some protagonism for that team and have more of a following than perhaps they have outside of Spain. It's a team that in theory could generate a lot of sympathy around the world, right? It in sort of the same way that Chivas is a team that's very popular outside of Mexico. Atlético Bilbao, I think, could, again, going back to the marketing issue, you know, it's a team that if you market it right, that they could generate a huge following outside of Spain.
Because if we look at it, Athletic Bilbao are kind of the direct opposite to Malaga, if you like. Not that they're not spending money, but in terms of they only can use what they determine to be best players. It's not a written rule, but that's what they've kind of stuck to over the years.
Right.
Whereas Malaga, as we all know, have had their Middle Eastern owners, they're splashing the cash. So Athletic, as you said, should gain a lot of neutral support around Europe and around the world if they were marketed correctly, because they're a very well-run club in that regard. And I think
they have some good talent, and there's a lot of young players there that are you know, part of the national team. And I'm curious to see with a player, you know, if Bielsa sort of implements a style like Chile, you know, or his version of Chile, I think that it could be very, very attractive for La Liga. You know, that kind of football. It's a team that has a high pace usually, so I think it fits them well, their temperament, and at home I think they're going to be very, very difficult to beat.
Oh yeah, I agree.
Go ahead, Ravi.
I think Bielsa, not only as a coach, you know, adding new things to the team, but he is a well-followed and well-respected, famous coach outside of Spain
and that's
around the world.
Yeah.
And that will bring them a lot of exposure.
Right. That's what I meant about he can be, you know, a protagonist too, sort of like Mourinho is, you know, maybe not as controversial, but he's a guy who attracts a lot of attention, right? There's a lot always, what's Bielsa going to say, what's Bielsa going to do? And I think that can, you know, put the focus a little bit on Atletico as well.
Absolutely, and if you look at if you just look at his style, it's a very intensive style, and Chile was very. Hello.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to say.
Agreeing with you that I think it fits that style, that it fits them perfectly. They're sort of you know, that style of Los Leones, right? And this constant fighting and never giving up. I think it really well suited for that philosophy of football.
And I think it's just so much more suited to club football as well, because, you know, with his style, with the benefit of having the players there all the time to work with, they can become more drilled. If you look at his Argentina team, the problems they had with fitness in the 2002 World Cup, that's the downside to taking that management style to an international level. And also, I think you could draw a parallel in some ways with if you look at Sevilla a few years ago when they were challenging that higher energy, high tempo style. I think it's going to be something very interesting to watch. And, you know, I wish them all the best. I think it could be a real story in the league of this season.
That's a very good point, Joseph. Yeah, with Sevilla team, right? That high energy and that high pace with those players. Absolutely.
Yeah, one caveat on Athletic and Bielsa is that so far, they've been with Caparrós and the previous coaches. They've been a team that was considered more direct style of football and generally had these, you know, players with a little bit less on the technical side, but very athletic and very strong physically, and the power game and also the aerial game with strikers like Llorente. But right now what they have is they have in Javi Martinez, Iker Muniain, and Ander Herrera, who they picked up recently, a very good core to work with, where very technical midfield. And with adding Bielsa, it's a great fit. Now, how they're going to transition from the old Caparrós style to the new Bielsa style of football, there is going to be some players who were crowd favorites probably gone from the team. I've been hearing that Pablo Ruiz might be gone. which would be he's like a captain and a very famous or a popular guy in the among the fans. The other thing is their bench is kind of very thin, so it remains to be seen how Bielsa can put his high energy system and how he will cope with injuries if he gets some. Otherwise, I think this team is primed for a great run this year.
Another team moving on up the table that is interesting me with their activity this summer is Valencia. Obviously, they've got rid of Vicente and Joaquin, so they've shipped a lot of their loan their wages out the door. Like, they were both on high wages, not playing that often due to injury and poor form. So they've managed to use the money they've got from them, as well as Isco going to Malaga, to strengthen the squad in some interesting ways, I think. Adil Rami is a very good defender from Lille, and then they've also brought in Piatti from Almeria, who seems to be doing very well in the friendlies alongside Jonas up front. How do you think they're going to get on this year, Eddie?
Well, again, this is a team that has very good players. Emery, I think, has not completely been able to get that the fans behind him. It's always going to be a lot of tension for him, and I think that's going to affect the performance always, because as soon as he has two or three bad results, there's going to be a lot of pressure on him. And I think that kind of atmosphere is not conducive to good football. But at the end of the day, if with the players that they have, and if Mata is in good form, they're always going to be a difficult team to beat. He's always going to have them well organized on the back, and we'll see what he can get out of Banegas this year. The midfield to me is a question there. And of course, you know, they always have some loose cannons like Miguel, Banega himself. It's a strange team for me to try to analyze. And they're certainly far from the Valencia that was competing for La Liga and also for the European Championship. I think they're not at that level, but they will be at times a very difficult team to beat.
Yeah. Ravi, do you think Sergio Canales and Dani Parejo can make an impact there?
Well, they can definitely make an impact. The thing with Valencia, Edu pointed out about the crowd, the fans not being happy with Emery or quickly getting against him. One of the reasons for that is over the past couple of years, Valencia has been one of the teams. There has been a lot of turnover of players. Every year they would get in six or seven new players, and six or seven would leave. And then Emery himself, during the game in the season, he would change systems often, and that's one knock against him. You know, sometimes that is by necessity, but sometimes he does seem to come off as a bit of a tinkerman. Coming to this year, I think Dani Parejo is a good signing for them, and Piatti, Parejo, and Canales, those are three great signings. But I just feel that they have strengthened a position where they already had some cover. So now there is a lot of players fighting for the they usually play the 4-2-3-1. There are a lot of players fighting for the three. The three in behind the striker, and the double pivot and having a deep lying midfielder who can create, I think they still have that problem. They have to depend on a guy like Banega, who could be a loose cannon at times. They are trying to slot in Parejo in that role, but Parejo, from what I've seen in Getafe, is more the guy that would be like much in advanced positions on the pitch where he does his best work. It's same with Piazzi, he's on the wing. So it will be interesting to see how they will slot all these people in. And Canales is also a classic number 10 behind the striker player. It's going to be interesting. The other bit about Mata is, well, I still think there will be some more transfer rumor around Mata. I know that Arsene Wenger had said that they're not going to sign Mata, but we'll see. There are still 2 weeks to go for that.
Joseph, do you have anything to
add? I think Ravi and Edu have covered it perfectly there. I haven't got much else to add, but I do think Unai Emery is a very interesting coach. And as Ravi says, with the turnover of players, and with, you know, he's had to chop and change systems at times, and he's been accused of being defensive at times. But when you look at the games he's given Guardiola's Barcelona, the difficulties they've had against him, you can see his merits as a coach. And yes, Canales is the one that catches the eye for sure. But I've long been an admirer of Pablo Piatti, and I think especially with all this talk of I think as well there's still quite a chance that Mata could leave, and I think it's just sensible to add players like this to the squad. And I would think they should be good to finish third, certainly in the top four again this season.
One thing I do have to say in favor of Valencia, I love the shirts that they wore. I guess it was yesterday or the day before.
Yes, La Cheniera.
Yeah, that's a shirt that I remember from a kid, Mario Alberto Kempes wearing, and I love when they wear those shirts. I really do. It's kind of like when Notre Dame or something brings out the gold helmets, you know. It's a shirt that they don't wear very often, but when they wear, I think those are great things of tradition. And again, something else that could be marketed really well. Right.
Yeah, La Cheniera is just to add is I think over 1,200 years old. The flag of the area of Valencia and, you know, Catalonia, we use that the yellow and red stripes.
Right, and if you look at the history behind the bat as well, right? So there's a lot of history there, a lot of richness that again could be exploited. And I, when they wear those shirts, I it just transports me back to, you know, my Alberto Kempes playing with them and being a kid and Rick Claramunt and those great players that they had. And it, I think that's what football is all about. And I wish them well. I think they're in a very difficult position financially, and it's a game of expectations, right? Emery has that sort of sword over his head. He's being judged against the success that they had, you know, 10 years ago, 7 years ago, and it's very, very hard, given their financial situation, to repeat that success on the field.
Well, Spain obviously has four Champions League spots, as with England, and it also has two UEFA Cup spots. So if we're going to pencil Barcelona and Real Madrid as
Hey, Chris, you're sounding very low. You sound
different. Okay.
That's better.
So if we're going to pencil Real Madrid and Barcelona in as the top two positions, who are you guys seeing challenging for the other two Champions League spots as well as those two Europa League spots?
Well, if you let me answer first, if you don't mind, I think Sevilla will be an interesting team to follow because a lot of it will depend on Negredo and Canute, what kind of form they're in, and if they're in good form, they will be one of the teams up there. Atletico Madrid, I'm very curious to see what they can produce. Right, it's always another sort of you throw the coin up in the air and you don't know where it's going to land. But it's a team that I want to follow. Atletico Bilbao, for sure, I think will be a difficult team to deal with. Valencia as well. And, of course, Villarreal, who is not a surprise to anybody. I think, you know, those are no surprises there, right? I wish I could, you know, pull something out of the hat and tell you. But those are the teams that I think will be competing.
And I think as well with Sevilla this season, you look at the problems they had in the first half of last season, the utter lack of creativity in midfield, bombing out of the Champions League to Braga. And then you look at how their season was turned around by one transfer, Ivan Rakitic, who had an absolutely exceptional second half of the season. And I think that's going to be a huge boost for them going into this season. And when you see the departures at Villarreal, there's a little bit of flux there, whereas before you would have said Villarreal and Valencia were clearly the best two teams outside the top two. I think that last spot could be up for grabs, and if Sevilla can make a good start, they'll have a chance. And of course, you know, I've mentioned Malaga already. As for Villarreal, obviously Ravi is clearly more qualified to talk about them than any of the rest of us, so I'd like to bounce that across to him.
I think all of you guys made great points. I think it's between Sevilla, Villarreal, Valencia, Malaga, Atletico Madrid, and Athletic Bilbao, probably taking up the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 spots. For the Champions League specifically, I think Villarreal, definitely there are some doubts now because Santi Cazorla was like the engine of the team. Although the team has been able to keep up the rest of the stars intact, just losing one player, it's going to be Villarreal is going to have to change the style of play because Santi Cazorla is a player you can't replace. So I think that question mark stays there. And the other bit is Sevilla is interesting because, as Joseph pointed out, Rakitic was a great signing. They also picked up Piotr Trochowski from Germany. And he's been good in the preseason. And if Kanute can stay healthy, they are going to challenge for that fourth spot. Atletico Madrid, I was talking to a ESPN SoccerNet journalist yesterday in a podcast. He was mentioning that Forlan could still leave because he's still very upset with the organization. So if Forlan does leave, I see they will have a lot of tough time to keep up in the top 6, 7 spots.
I've seen some rumors yesterday about, I don't know how much stock you can place in these rumors, but some talk even of Inter making a move for Forlan with this Edo deal looking to go through. Obviously, we all know Forlan had had his problems with Kike Sanchez Flores last season, and he had his problems with the crowd turning on him, but, you know, he still has the potential to be a very important player for them, and he would be to me, I think, he's still got a lot to offer, and he would be a massive loss if he was allowed to leave, and you'd wonder who they can bring in to replace him, because they haven't really been making any great moves in the market this summer, have they?
Well, they just picked up Adrian Lopez from the under-21 squad that won the Euro for Spain. He was the top scorer there, but yeah, they haven't made many big moves as far as have some good players. So it's going to be interesting how they just signed Arda Turan. Interesting signing. I always loved that player when I saw him in Turkish colors. But he never played outside Turkey or Turkish national team. So it's going to be interesting if he can adapt quickly to Spanish league and especially to Atletico Madrid and the Madrid press.
I think just coming back on that too, if you look at the year when Torres left, when they got a windfall, they really used that money well. I mean, for a club that's permanently in institutional crisis, they were able to bring in good players like Reyes, like Forlan, of course, and that's really been the backbone of the success they've had in recent years. Winning the Europa League, and they've had that big windfall again with Kun, and.
And De Gea.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just a bit disappointing to see that they're not a bit more active with that amount of income generated. But it's going to be interesting to see. And, of course, Manzano in charge. Well, he's always a great fun to track.
Yeah, and they are trying to get Falcao. And I always take that rumor with a pinch of salt because I cannot see Falcao moving to Atletico Madrid at this point this year because Atletico is in Europa League and Porto haven't lost much. They are still in the Champions League. They've lost Andres Villas-Boas. So I can see Falcao going to Premier League, but I doubt he will move to Atletico. But if they do get him, it will be a coup.
It would be. But of course, he did sign a new contract. But of course, we all know that players do this out of loyalty to their clubs from time to time. But I got the feeling once he signed that new contract that he's probably going to stay put and have a crack at the Champions League with Porto, as you say.
So we've discussed those positions. Let's move on now to the top two spaces. Edu, do you see any hope for Jose Mourinho and Real Madrid for ending Barcelona's dominance. Obviously, we'll have the Super Cup tonight, which we can't really talk about as it will happen just after we record this. But do you see any hope for them?
Yeah, you know, there could be some kind of kidnapping of Messi. And short of that, you know, there is hope. But I still see Barcelona being the more decisive team because of the players. And Barcelona is able to pressure the ball so well and recover the ball so quickly that unless Real Madrid essentially changes their philosophy and the way they want to play, and they decide that they're going to keep the ball and they're not going to try to counter the way they do, which produces a lot of, you know, loss opportunities or loss possession losses. And unless they do that, I think it's going to be difficult for Real Madrid. But of course they have hope. And we saw that they could beat Barcelona. They did last year. And the games, other than the first game, which was essentially, you know, one of those games where everything goes right for one of the teams and the other team, you know, just doesn't, it's not able even to take, you know, swing a punch if it was a boxing match. But the other game, you know, the difference between the two teams is not as obvious as significant as it was during the first game. But I still think, you know, Barcelona just has more talent, especially in key players, right? So unless they're able to neutralize that, it's going to be difficult for him to beat Barcelona consistently. But I think they have you know, a chance, and they've made some improvements, and tactically he showed that he could adjust. And I'm one of those people who is not a you know, critic of Mourinho's tactics of putting Pep in the midfield or something like that. I think those are the resources that he has, and you know, he's allowed to do whatever he wants in that sense. So we'll see if he has any new wrinkles for Barcelona this year. But I think, you know, Thiago has proven to be a very dynamic player. I love Alexis Sanchez. I think he's a perfect fit for Barcelona. So, you know, if you have an injury to Iniesta or to Pedro, maybe even to Xavi, you know, and apparently Cesc Fabregas is going to join the team as well. So, you know, it's a team that I think it's ready to suffer some injuries and still be able to produce you know, good football, and therefore I still give the edge to Barcelona over Real Madrid.
Ravi, do you have anything to add on this debate?
Well, when I wrote a review for a magazine outside of the United States in a couple of weeks ago, I picked Madrid. But by then, Cesc Fabregas' deal wasn't done, and it didn't look like it was going to get done. So looking back at it right now, I would still be on Real Madrid winning the league. But I think now it's much more difficult for them, because what I didn't envision was that Neymar not joining Madrid this summer. It seems like it's not going to happen now. So if you look at the signings of Madrid, so they have signed Nuri Sahin, one of the players of the year in Germany, with Borussia Dortmund, the champions. And then they've signed Jose Callejon from Espanyol, and then Fabio Coentrao from Benfica. They've signed Alten Top. I don't think he's going to make any difference. And Rafael Varane, I think he's a young guy. Probably they're looking for a long term for him. He's 18-year-old. So of these three, Callejon is going to be a squad player. Sahin has been injured. I think Mourinho wanted to switch from 4-2-3-1 to a 4-3-3 with Sahin, Xabi Alonso, and Khedira in the midfield in some games to add more dynamism to the midfield and also not lose much in terms of creativity. But since we haven't seen him at all in the preseason, and I doubt he will make an impact in the first few weeks. Looking at Coentrao is an interesting signing. At the outset, it looked like 30 million for a left back was very high price to pay. But from what I've seen in preseason, he can play a lot of positions without losing a level on his performance. And I think he can play up the midfield or even on the right side of the pitch. So that's going to be the X factor. I think if Quintal can do something, and he's a high energy player like players like Mourinho likes them, so he's going to be a good player to add into the mix so that when Barcelona is keeping the ball in the midfield, he can add to the pressure game along with Pepe in the midfield. And can liberate Xabi Alonso a little bit to do to look out on the creative side. But then Barcelona, I look at the two signings of Barcelona, Cesc and Alexis, and they are just fabulous because they've upgraded a team that seemed like, how can we upgrade this anymore on the offense? And with the bonus that Thiago looks set to be a star, they have now added three players to their midfield and the forward line that's going to be a big deal for them because they have struggled last year with injuries and Villa was tired towards the end because of playing the World Cup. I think that they've done great. Where they have question marks and lack depth is the defense because Puyol has been injured for almost 6 months. And so they've been like using makeshift with Mascherano there. But I think if Puyol comes back, they are going to be very hard to beat this year. So
you make a point there, Robbie. I think the defense and Piqué has looked surprisingly slow this preseason. He looks more like the player from Zaragoza and from Man U than the sort of slim down Piqué that we found in Barcelona, right? There is concern there, no doubt about it. I think, and it's surprising that they have not sort of recuperated Botia from Sporting and that they let go Romeo to Chelsea, right?
Yeah. And Jose Angel, they seem like they signed and they seem to have called off the deal for some flimsy reason that Sporting has announced before Barcelona told them to announce. It seemed like a Bush League move to me because Jose Angel would have been a great fit for them in a couple of years because Abidal is getting old and they don't have much of a cover on the left back side.
I think the guys have touched upon all the main points there, so there's very little left for me to add. I think it is, if you look at the pluses for both of the big two sides going into this season, yeah, I mean, for Barcelona, they've been playing with a very, very tight squad, a very slimmed-down first-team squad for a number of years now, and, you know, we've heard people say year on year it's going to come back and bite them, but it never has to any great extent, but you always run that risk when you have such a small squad. And also, you know, with some of the signings they've made in recent years for big money, I'm thinking guys like Chigrinsky and Zlatan, who I don't think was all that bad, but they do have difficulty at times integrating players into the setup because the style of play in the first team is so settled. And that's why I think it makes so much sense to bring in a guy like Alexis Sanchez, who can play right across the front line. He's very versatile. He seems to me a perfect fit for Barcelona. And it's only stating the obvious that a guy like Cesc, who's come through the academy there, is obviously a player who's going to slot into that style of play. You see a lot of journalists in England especially saying, why do they need Cesc? And, you know, I've heard people cite the example of the Spanish national team that he can't get into that team. But if you look at the impact Cesc has had in both of the last two international competitions for Spain coming on as a substitute, he can slot into the roles feasibly that Xavi and Iniesta perform, but also he's kind of played different roles for Arsenal over the years, and he's got that thrust and that drive about him. And you know, obviously he's seen as a long-term signing, and I do think they do need that extra bit of quality in that area of the pitch because they aren't always going to be as lucky with injuries as they have been this year. And of course, we are, it's been mentioned here now about the lack of cover in certain areas in the back line. You look at the amount of players they have in certain positions and other positions, they're a bit light. But I think once they've got things sorted further up the field, we've seen they can adjust. We've seen the two Champions League finals against Manchester United where they've gone in with makeshift defences and it's not been an issue. We've seen Busquets drop back in there and we've seen Mascherano drop back in there. And okay, ideally you do want orthodox central defenders there, but if you've got the players up the field who can keep the ball as well as they can, you know, it should limit their exposure in that area. Now, the way I see it with Real is I think they have that depth in the squad, and that's probably the key thing that they have over Barcelona. And also something that they have this year is, you know, they haven't, after the last two summers, after all the players they brought in, they've bought less players this year and they've bought sensibly. And I don't really have to add anything else on Quintrao. We've seen how he slotted in even on the left of midfield in preseason, and he can add a lot to that team. I would say that I think Sahin will be a good signing because we've seen them struggle at times in games last season when Xabi Alonso wasn't fit. He's very important, and they don't really have anybody else, or they didn't have anybody else who could perform that sort of role, that distribution role at the base of midfield. And that's where I think Sahin will be a good signing. And as for Altintop, he's just more a matter of adding depth. He's a good signing on a free transfer. But I think Mourinho will know his team a lot better this year than he did at this time last year. And, you know, of course, they've got a chance. It's going to be very, very difficult. But, again, although I stress that Barcelona are adding depth, if you lose guys like Xavi and Iniesta at the same time, or, even Messi up front and one of those two, they could struggle more than we've seen them in seasons gone by because they haven't really had to deal with that sort of a situation. Messi's been largely injury-free for the last 4 years, and I think that's probably Real's biggest hope, but I do think they will run Barcelona a lot closer this year for sure.
All right, well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and...
Hey, Chris, you're again very low.
Very sorry. Okay, I'm going to go out...
You fell off the limb.
Okay, sorry. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say Real Madrid are going to sneak the La Liga title this year. And you guys can hold me to this next May when Barcelona romp home by 20 points. But... I think their squad depth, I think Barcelona, although they've had injuries, have just about covered them over in the last couple of years. I think it may come back to haunt them this year. So I just want a prediction off the three of you quickly, and then we'll sign off the show. So, Edu, what do you reckon for the championship?
I think Barcelona, Madrid, and I'm going to go on a limb here. I'm going to say... Atletico de Bilbao and Malaga, those are the top four. And I think Madrid has a much better chance with this squad to make it to the Champions League final and win it. I think the team, I see them more likely to do that and to be able to beat Barcelona in, you know, over one match, let's say, than for La Liga. But it should be interesting for sure, and I've enjoyed the podcast. And again, thanks for inviting me, Chris.
No worries. And Joseph, can I get your prediction, Madrid or Barcelona for the title?
I'm going to have to go with Barcelona, but you say you're going out on a limb and predicting Real. I wouldn't see that as going out on a limb. These are two very, very good teams. And if that Barcelona team, which is one of the best of all time, wasn't around, now we could potentially be talking about this as one of the best Real teams of all time as well. They certainly have all the tools. And as I've said, the extra year under Mourinho will stand to them. But if I had to pick one, I think you do have to go with Barcelona. It's going to come... You think more from a slip at their side than any of the strides that Real are potentially capable of making. I see Valencia retaining their place in the Champions League slots, and it's a very, very tough call to see who gets that fourth slot, You know, that group of teams just behind the behind, I would say, the top two, and behind, I think, Valencia as well. I think they just have the edge on the rest of the sides. I don't know. I think you might see Malaga just sneak into that last Champions League slot.
Ravi,
I will still stick with Real Madrid for the championship. I think it will be a close one. Madrid will not lose so many points to the smaller teams that they have lost, like last year. And the Clásicos will be closer and probably end in draws. So I still have Madrid there. As far as Champions League goes, I have Valencia in the Champions League spot. And as Joseph just said, I can see Malaga sneaking into the last Champions League spot with Villarreal probably fifth. That would be a very close battle till the last game.
So we've all finished on a general consensus on the top four. Maybe their places will change, but it's good to know we're all on the same wavelength at least. Well, I'd like to thank all of you guys. Edu, who can be found on Twitter at La Lambretta. We have Ravi, who can be found at Alpa Submarino, that's AUPASUBMARINO, and also Joseph, who's on Twitter at JosephSPCN. So thank you guys, it's been a pleasure having you. I hope to have all of you back on at some point during the season so we can get the latest on the action from Spain and other issues from around Europe.
Thanks, Chris, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Chris, it's been a pleasure to be on the show.
Thanks to all.